Welcome to Prison Break. We are excited to bring forth our very first podcast. It's entitled Prison Break, and we have a lot to share with you. And here with me is Cecil Robinson, and I'm Donna Stevenson, CEO of Early Warning Software.
Good afternoon. As Donna just stated, I'm Cecil Robinson. I'm the Chief Technology Officer and founder of Early Warning Software, the manufacturer of Prism Compliance Management. We have a lot of information to share with you, and I hope that you stay tuned with us. And for each week, you're going to get a story that we have to tell you. We're going to give you some more information about how to run your business, whether you're a startup or an emerging business. We are excited to share this information with you as well. Thank you.
And we also will be sharing some of the leading practices in supply diversity and contract compliance management that our clients use every day to grow small businesses, to expand the growth of jobs being created in their communities and making a difference. So we're going to start just at the beginning. I met Cecil when I worked at IBM. And I was a systems engineer there, working out celebrating my birthday, which is actually coming up this week.
Yeah.
And so it's true to the time frame that I met. So I was out with some friends having dinner, and this fine gentleman asked me to play backgammon with him at this busy restaurant. And who would know that these many years later that we would find ourselves here. But yes, at that time, I was working for IBM as a systems engineer.
And I was with AT&T Bell Laboratories.
And his title was systems engineer as well, which was interesting because our jobs were nothing alike. Mm-hmm. But we quickly, learned that there was a collaboration that could happen. And Cecil, share a little bit about why you had an interest in starting a software business.
Actually, it was a force to be reckoned with that I did not recognize at the time that it was happening. But I was at AT&T Bell Laboratories. I had just finished my master's degree from Bowie State University, a master's degree in computer science. And I was wondering what the next step was. And I was approached by a young systems integration company that was looking to start an engineering division at their company. And they asked and they recruited me to help start, jumpstart that engineering program that they would have at their company. And unbeknownst to my first day of work, they told me that they had to do some finagling in order to afford me with my salary and things like that. And I just took that as a signal that I should really start pursuing some other things. And after talking with Donna about it, because actually we were dating at the time, after talking with Donna about it, she said, well, if you were going to do this for someone else, you can do it for yourself. And so we launched the company. I launched the company, Early Warning Software. And boy, was this a learning experience for me. When I was at Bell Labs, by the time work got to me, all of the deals were done. But now I have to be out there making the deals happen and then doing the work. And so that's how the company started. And like I said, we have a lot of stories to share with you. It's been 30 years, and it's 30 years worth of stories. So fasten your seatbelt, get your notepad. We have a lot of information to share.
So as Cecil was sharing, I was actually at IBM at the time that he started the business. In fact, I stayed at IBM for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So here's the time frame. The business got started in August of 1993. Yeah. I was still in grad school and just wrapping up actually grad school at the time that Cecil decided to start the business. And as he said, it wasn't anything that was planned. Now here I am, I'm just finishing my master's in business. And the first thing in B school is that they tell you, you need to have about $200,000 saved to start the business, in addition to a well laid out business plan. And he comes and shares what happens and that he's quit the very job that he had just started. And this is my fiance, we're not even married. And so I'm like, oh my God. But I knew Cecil's background and experience as a technical professional. And I also knew that he had clearances, security clearances, so that if he did not get this business started, that he could actually easily get a job again. So he's right. I did tell him that if you were going to start this software division.
I didn't know she had all that background.
If he was going to start the software division for someone else, that he could do it for himself. Now, in the background, I told my mom that story, and she was like, what? What did you do? And you're not even married, and, you know, you're going to start your life this way. And what was different with her perspective is that she was married to my dad, who had a construction business that had ebbs and flows, but she wasn't in it. But the difference was with Cecil and I, that this was going to be our dream. And I wasn't going to sit on the sidelines and not participate. I knew that I could actually team up with him and help fuel the business. So Cecil did start, and we were fortunate to begin with a contract, a single contract that allowed him to get the business started. And meanwhile, I continued to work at IBM for another 2 years. But it came to a point where it was clear to me that it wasn't actually going to go very far, because Cecil didn't understand the sales side of the business, the marketing side of the business. In fact, people were telling him, if you stop calling me, I'll give you some business.
I didn't understand when I called people why they wouldn't return my call. I thought it was very rude. And I would tell Donna, that's just rude. if you don't, at least return the call and tell me to stop calling you or something, if that's what you want. But it was naivete. And so I think she said, I think I better jump in and help this guy. I was invoicing people when I needed money, not as a standard practice.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I needed the help in the front office to take care of things so that I can do R&D.
So the first thing we really had to do was to come up with a name, which Cecil inspired, because he and the other engineers that were working with us, they had started by working full-time for their respective companies, and then doing development in the late evenings into the early mornings. So they had kind of deemed themselves the early morning engineers. And I thought, wow, early morning software is a great name. People will not forget it. Although some people get it confused sometimes with Morning Star, but early morning software stuck. And we started getting everything branded, started marketing the company. So I joined the company 2 years later after starting, and we started pursuing customers. And I knew with the level of technical expertise that Cecil had exhibited in delivering the services to the first customer, that he and the team would almost be able to deliver anything I could go out and market. And that's exactly what I did. And we were really fortunate when we started. Most people don't even remember when Microsoft Windows actually started.
Yeah.
But we do. And Windows was just being introduced by Microsoft. And it was at that time that many of the governments wanted to get out of the green screens and orange screen dumb terminals that their software was presented on. And we were ripe. Cecil and the team immediately came up to speed. And I think back then, was it Visual Basic?
Microsoft introduced this programming language for their Windows platform called Visual Basic. And we picked it up in a weekend and started developing apps that we would use to show state and local governments that we could develop apps. And then at the same time, I was being recorded by some of the intelligence agencies that I was consulting with when I was with AT&T Bell Labs. And so we picked that up as a contract as well. So we had this big contract that provided sustainability in the company. And then we were doing this software development in this new Windows platform using this new programming language for state and local government. And things began to take off from there.
So interestingly enough, we did often go before customers and we were able to share our expertise. First of all, because we had developed the application of the educational software, and we were able to showcase that educational software as an example of the work that the customers would get potentially. But even though we were able to show that work, sometimes we would be confronted by customers who would not believe we actually developed it, that that work came out of our research and development lab. It was unbelievable. In fact, there were a couple meetings I can recall where, and I'm rarely speechless, but I would be speechless because the leader that I would be meeting with would ask me, how many black people work for us? As if they could not believe that the software that we were presenting was actually engineered by black people.
Because back during that time, companies of our historic background were selling computers. They were doing sales of laptops and desktops. They were doing training and things like that. And then here you have this 30-year-old couple coming in talking about, we want to do R&D. We want to develop some of your enterprise apps and things like that. And they were just taken aback from it. And they couldn't comprehend it at first. So initially, it was very difficult to get some really substantial, some significant type of development work in the state and local government and in the commercial companies around the area. But we kept pushing and pushing and pushing. Meanwhile, we were taking whatever they would give us. And our first contract outside of some of the other things that we were doing, the first significant contract that we had was to develop a PowerPoint presentation for someone. They had a lot of notes and things like that. They worked for a local government here in Maryland, and they wanted to put on this big presentation. So they asked us to digest all of these notes and put it into Microsoft PowerPoint. That was our first, absolutely our first contract. And I remember just sitting there like, wow, all of this technical ability that we have, and we're sitting up here developing this PowerPoint presentation. But it led to other things. It led to other things. We built a relationship with that person that asked us to do that, and that led to other things. And we have some other stories to share where the same thing happened at one of the intelligence agencies. We went in there marketing, 9 to 12 months of marketing, meetings being broken, being stood up for meetings. They're not happening. And then when we finally got to the people and met and gave a presentation of all of our capability, our engineering and everything. They asked us if we could sell them a laptop. And I was like, really? But
by then we had created Quick Pages.
Yeah.
And Quick Pages was our first product. And Quick Pages was initially a client services based telephone directory. And it was state of the art back then. This was before Outlook existed.
Yeah.
And Quick Pages had three discs, those 3.5 discs. And the telephone directory actually went on the fourth disc. And in fact, the state of Maryland was one of our first clients. And I'll never forget it. Governor Glenn Denning was so proud to have his telephone directory automated. They would produce paper directories. And for him, it was frustrating that the moment that directory was printed, it was out of date. So Quick Pages, the diskettes were put for the software and his directory were put in the back of the phone directory. And when he would go to conferences, he would hand his directory with Quick Pages out to his colleagues from around the country. And that's how we got our start. And ultimately, Quick Pages for the web came about. But before that, it allowed us, when the agency said, sell them laptops, we said, can we sell you Quick Pages too? So we immediately installed Quick Pages on the laptops in addition to, so we could claim that the NSA had bought our product. So it was notable, you know, to one, have the state of Maryland lead in buying our product, and not just the disk that went into the back of the directory, but then ultimately allow us to host Quick Pages for the web. We brought forward the state's very first web-based application.
Yeah.
It was hosted in our lab.
Yeah. And just for the younger folk, the software was distributed on a diskette, which nowadays is equivalent to one of the little flash drives. And so you would put it in your machine. You would put the diskette in your machine just like you put a flash drive in your USB port, and then you can install things from that diskette.
And so here we are, this young company, and as far as I was concerned, after seeing the software be developed, there was nothing that we could not do. And my perspective is to get into the agencies, find out what their need was, just like I used to do for IBM. But instead of saying I'm selling you a big mainframe or a small mini computer with IBM applications, I was going to convince them that we could actually develop an application that would enable them to improve their operations, because I had a high degree of confidence that Cecil and the team would be able to produce it. And that was the beauty of the making of Early Morning Software. Our relationship is the absolute trust. That there was virtually nothing that I could go out and sell and not count on my engineering team to be able to produce. And that is what fueled my ability. But we ran into some challenges.
Yeah.
In time, the little small applications I was able to sell because they were under a certain dollar threshold. But in time, those applications were growing, and the expectation of what we were able to deliver grew. And it was imperative that we figure out how to sell, and that was a challenge. We saw other companies being able to, win opportunities. We were responding. I remember one year, I think we responded to almost 50 RFPs, and won maybe 10% of the, and I was dog tired, worn out, late, staying up late, and only to realize that there's got to be a better way to win opportunities than the way we were, because it just didn't seem like that's the way our competition was experiencing.
We were young, and we were learning this whole procurement thing and how it worked, and we were responding to RFPs when we got them. And some of these RFPs, when we received them, it was also the first time that we were learning about this particular opportunity. And we didn't know about getting in front of some of these things and anticipating, and we were going to these pre-bids and things, and only to realize that everybody else in the room already knew about this RFP, that it was coming. They were already prepared for it, and we were responding. We were spinning our wheels responding to these things, and we were new to it, and the other people were true to it, and they prospered from it, and we didn't, because we were learning, and we were responding, and we just have so much information to share with you about responding to these RFPs, just based on things that we learned. The other thing, we were attending every outreach event that occurred within Delaware, Maryland, and D.C. Virginia. We were going to every outreach event, and we learned that it's really not necessary to try to attend all of them. And we started targeting particular people that would be at these outreach events and not necessarily the entire outreach event. And if those people that we're targeting to try to do business with, if they weren't going to be at that outreach event, we would just pass on it. And so that's just another tidbit for you guys.
So one of the key things I think that really separated Early Morning Software from other businesses is that it quickly became known that our clients could count on us for deep engineering, right? As Cecil said, a lot of the other IT businesses, small businesses, they were selling software, they were selling hardware,
training.
They were doing training. Mm-hmm. And not to say we didn't do some of those things, we absolutely did in the beginning, just to get client names, right? Mm-hmm. Just to be able to say, oh, the city of Baltimore is a customer, right? That right there demonstrated that our ability to do business and engage with clients. Mm-hmm. But as we began to get really focused, customers understood that there was some engineering expertise that they were not getting. And in fact, I remember a conversation with from the NSA. And even in the differentiation of when we sold the laptops, the fact that we even asked them, what are you going to use the laptops for? And helped them understand that the model that they were buying was insufficient for the need. So something as basic as that, that differentiated our business. So customers, and I fast forward from 1993, here it is, we're approaching 2000. And everyone was concerned about the turn of the century. Remember, Y2K was a humongous deal. And it was, all the clients were concerned that their applications were going to shut down. They wouldn't be able to process payroll. The banking systems would shut down if the software applications were not retooled. Mm-hmm. And I remember a day when Morgan State University called
Gilbert Morgan.
And he had come across one of those situations. And I think his engineers, and even the folks who sold them the equipment could not solve this problem. And they called upon Cecil and the team to actually figure out how to solve the problem. Otherwise, they would not be able to process payroll. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we stepped up. our engineers came in and we solved it. And it's those relationships that allowed us to get the references that we have today. So it was earning references like the City of Baltimore, Morgan State
the of NSA, Maryland. Yeah.
The Center for Medicaid and Medicaid Services, mm-hmm. That really enabled us to propel, because folks knew early morning software was a special place to get that engineering done, mm-hmm. to solve problems. And in fact, mm-hmm. with the software that we developed for Quick Pages, for the web, as well as the client server version, the binary clock. The binary clock was another one of our premier products, although mm-hmm. we thought it was going to take off like the pet rock, yeah. But it didn't.
It didn't. It's sad. It was sad. That's a story that we'll
that's
get
a story
to
we'll tell you later.
Because there's a lot to learn from that. Although that clock didn't do too well, we actually conceived an idea and made it a product, took it commercial, just that we sold about 100 of them before.
Yeah. But I think that the key thing that's the takeaway, right, is that for us was seeing our ability to actually take something that we dreamed, right,
yeah.
a concept that we conceived,
mm-hmm.
and take that concept to something that was material, right?
Right.
And the same thing with Quick Pages, right?
Yeah.
We saw the need, and we just didn't ignore the need.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the need and fulfilled it and brought a product to market. So what we began to realize is our capacity to commercialize things. And that was going to be our separation from others. But the key thing was, when Microsoft introduced Outlook, how quickly a product could become obsolete.
Overnight.
And so that was the challenge that we had realized that we had to do a better job. And this is really sits on, as I say, on my side of the table. Because it was about marketing research,
yeah.
and being able to know that if you do produce something, that it's sellable,
yeah.
right? So it wasn't just good enough to have a product. You had to have a audience. And so I went back to my four P's from MBA school. You know, it was about placement. It was about pricing. It was about promotion.
Promotion.
Right? Not just the product.
Not just.
So the key thing I knew is that we could produce great products, but I had to really be able to focus on those other things. So let's fast forward. How did we get to product four? Product four, wow. So here we are working feverishly. And I mentioned earlier what the challenge was in responding to RFPs. And so we just started asking questions and digging and trying to figure out how were these other businesses getting opportunity. It didn't seem like that they were only responding to RFPs. And I happened to be sitting down with this particular time with Al Hagan. And he shared with me that we needed a contract vehicle. I was like, mm-hmm. what is a contract vehicle?
Yeah.
And we began to realize that we saw that the state and many of the local governments would only do business with the big companies. And then we would have to partner with the big companies,
yeah.
in order to offer our services. And that's exactly what we did. The state of Maryland put out a opportunity that included network services, but there was a component in it for application development and web development by this time. And so I managed to build that relationship and get Verizon to bring us in. Back then they were called Bell Atlantic, but get them to bring us in as a partner, because we had the past performance to show that we could bring customers. We were already doing business with many of the customers that they wanted. And then again, this was one of those niche. They didn't have many other partners that could engineer software. So with that niche, they were glad, invited us in to the partnership. We helped, you know, with the preparation of the proposal. We brought our past performance, and lo and behold, we won.
We won.
And that enabled us to really pursue state agencies and other local governments who were willing to buy from that particular contract vehicle. But it meant we were a subcontractor all the time.
Yeah.
But that wasn't a bad thing, because now we weren't restricted to customers who will only say, well, I can only do business with you if your opportunity is this small. They were able to actually increase the size that they were willing to spend with us, because now we had a legitimate contract vehicle that they could use. And we'll talk about those things in another episode, because it was critical to our growth. In fact, it was pivotal to our growth. So here we are. I was back. I felt like I, you know, was at another point, and being able to now engage with customers with a different level of clarity, a different level of confidence that we could actually deliver to them because of the contract vehicle. And then I could turn around again, get that to engineering, and they were knocking projects, you know, out of the box. I mean, we were winning awards for our work. We were being recognized. The state of Maryland had recognized us as one of, you know, their fastest growing, their top MBEs. I was recognized by the UMBC, the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, where I'm an alum, as one of the top alumni in technology, in engineering. We're now, you know, serving on boards, like the Alex Brown Entrepreneurship and Engineering Board, the Center for Women in IT. We're thriving. I mean, it's a great time. And lo and behold, things start to feel awkward with Verizon. Just a little bit that we began to notice our, you know, projects, our project engagement, you know, began to be a little strained. And I think the first instance was where one of our employees left. Remember that?
Yep, one of our employees left, one of our engineers left, and we was trying to figure out what was going on, and unbeknownst to us, our employee went to a company, another company that was also subbing to Verizon. We didn't pay much attention to it. And then we got called into a Verizon, and we had just made a big delivery to them of this education system for the Maryland State Department of Education. And it was a 1 year, close to a 9 month to 1 year effort of development. And they told us that they were gonna pay us pennies on the dollar for our system.
So here we are. Now, I'm actually out on maternity leave at this time. And we had done a phenomenal job planning. We had identified a president who was running the company, Sharon, while I was on leave. And I get this call from her, and she's telling me that we made this deliverable, and as Cecil just said, and then they're not going to pay us for it. And we have like 40 man months of effort into this project.
And then we learned that the Department of Education was using the software that we create.
So they were actually benefiting from our work, but now they're telling us they're not gonna pay us.
Yeah.
And it was, I think, I continue today, that was one of the toughest years of my life. The greatest thing I can say about that year was that my son was born. But at the same time, our industry was tanking. The dot-coms had burst.
The bubble burst.
It bubble burst. And so people were afraid, you know, to invest in technology. And then you fast forward in June, my son's born in March. Like in April, the dot-coms are tanking. In June, we get this call from the president saying that Verizon's not going to pay us. And then now we're scurrying around trying to figure out, if they don't pay us, can we maintain all of our employees? Because we've already lost two contracts with the employee leaving, another one that they had taken and given to another company. And it's not because of our performance. But in this particular instance, it is daunting. And we have to figure out, how do we survive? So Sharon and I put our heads together. And the first thing we have to do is figure out, how do we maintain this team? And unfortunately, it was the very first time we ever had to lay employees off. And it still chokes me up to this day that we had to do that. The other thing we did was to reduce the hours of our team. And they pitched in. Instead of being able to pay them for 40 hours a week, they worked 32 hours a week. Or at least that's what we paid them for. And they continued to work so that we could maintain the company. Mm-hmm. But the fact that we were in this situation was what was so difficult, because here we are, we're not being paid. The customer's benefiting from the software. Mm-hmm. And we go into negotiations, and they, as Cecil said, they're offering us pennies on a dollar. And so we immediately say, well, we need help. We got to hire an attorney to deal with this. But it was quickly determined that we wouldn't be able to sue them, because we were already strapped for working capital because they hadn't paid us and we lost those contracts. The lawyers were like, yeah, well, after the first $25,000 that we spent with them, they told us this is going to take at least a year. How are you going to, you know, deal with this? And it was a tough decision.
Yeah.
And that was over the summer. And then here comes 9/11 in September. And that also impacted us initially, because all of the dollars that had been allocated to technology projects by our typical state and local government customers, those dollars were immediately diverted to public safety. They weren't worried about spending in developing any new applications. Everything was focused on, how do we secure our borders? How do we make sure that things like 9/11, you know, do we have the proper security mechanisms in mm-hmm. place and that type of thing? But that was our saving grace. Diversification.
It was a saving grace, because as those things were happening, our work in the intelligence community was picking up. So we had opportunities to balance the load of the money that we were losing, or the money we had lost from this project. But to add insult to injury, we have some tea to spill here. We realized that those contracts that were taken from our company were given to the Verizon program manager's wife's brand new company.
So let's hold it up, because that's going to come up in a whole nother podcast going forward. What it did, though, expose to us, right, is because here we are reporting every month, telling the state we haven't been paid, right? We're telling them through these, you know, forms that we had to fill out, that we're owed money. And right. by the time we checked in with them and asked, what are you going to do about it? They said, oh, I'm sorry. We don't see the subs. Our contract is with the Prime. And so not only here we are, don't have funds to spend on a lawyer. Now the state is saying, yes, we told you to be the minority business sub to these companies, but we can't come to your defense. And so here, the realization that the paperwork that was being submitted was not being processed. And in fact, I remember walking into the guy's office and he had stacks of paper up to here. He couldn't even see, let alone be able to analyze those contracts for MBE participation. Mm-hmm. And that's when we realized that this is a failure. The whole process of this MBE is like, it's a fraud. If the state would allow someone to engage their MWBE community.
Yeah, our hearts were becoming galvanized on solving this problem so that other MBEs, DBEs, WBEs would not have to go through the same thing that we went through. So we thought about all of the things that it would take to make sure that the MBE offices had the tools that they needed in order to understand exactly what was going on inside of a contract. And we wanted to show more than a spreadsheet could show, because back in the day, that was it. Microsoft was the leading developer of compliance tools.
And for some people, it's still today.
Yes, and some is still Excel. Today. Excel is probably the still leading tool to do compliance. So we wanted to make sure that we provided all of the different features and things that it would take for a practitioner in the compliance office to see when they look at that screen, things that they could not see when they were in a spreadsheet, hence the name PRISM. So when you take a prism, which is a form of an isotope, and you shine light through it, it produces a set of light and on things that cannot be seen with the naked eye. So our tool wanted to show these practitioners things in the compliance industry that was going on that they could not see with the naked eye, hence the name PRISM. You'll be tested on this, by the way.
So I was really excited in consuming this whole concept of PRISM and really passionate about bringing this product to market. But I told you about being passionate about products and not considering the other three P's. And so this time, we decided that we better engage and really do the market research. And so I went back to my professor from MBA school, and we had some students, graduate students, do the research for us to evaluate whether we should bring this product to market. And they did a phenomenal job. They interviewed compliance officers, people who do certification, and they all felt the pain that these compliance officers said, there's no way we can effectively ensure that what you experienced with Verizon cannot happen to other MBEs. We just don't have the tools to do it. So we knew that there was a need. The question that they really asked us is, can you really promote it, right? Are you going to be able to get this placed right? And they came back with a list of things that they thought that if unless you overcome this, this product won't succeed. And so we were really excited their final report listed all these things. They told us the obstacles we were going to run into, and their conclusion was that we should not bring the product to the market. But that's exactly the information we needed. That market research allowed us to then go back to our engineering drawing board because we knew there was a need. They had done that aspect of the research. What we needed to know was how to engineer around the problems that they told us we were going to face. Mm-hmm. And hence, that's how we are here. We went forward, we brought Prism to the market, and boy, it's transforming the industry.
It is transforming MBEs, DBEs, WBEs, veteran business enterprises. They are growing their business. The capacity of these companies are growing, and they're getting paid. And as a side note to that, we're getting paid. So it's a win-win.
So we've had such great success in over the years bringing and expanding Prism Compliance Management. You find it at prismcompliance.com. It is the, my team, my client says it's the GOAT in the industry, the greatest of all time diversity solutions. Mm-hmm. It's an all-in-one solution. As Cecil said, it's transforming what minority and women-owned businesses can experience. I'm excited that in a few weeks we'll be showcasing the software and clients experiences at the National Forum for Black Public Administrators Conference that's going to be hosted mm-hmm. here in Baltimore. So we'll be able to share there. And that's also where we will record our next podcast, because we'll actually be able to engage some customers. So you have that to look forward to in our next podcast.
And also, Donna stopped me before I could spill the tea.
Yeah.
I will tell you guys this story about Verizon. And what was happening behind the scenes is some wicked stuff that you would see on Lifetime TV or something like that. So stay tuned for that. And we look forward to talking to you more about our business, about the good times, about the bad times, how we got through some things as well. So stay tuned. We look forward to talking to you later.
So please follow us on our social media handles. You'll find them in the description. We are on YouTube, we're on Facebook, and we're on LinkedIn. So stay tuned. We have so much to share. We know you will benefit from the experiences that we have. And I know, Cecil, I probably can speak for you, is that we've learned a lot of lessons in the 30 years that we've been in business. And we're going to share those lessons with you. So we hope that you don't have to experience them and that you can grow your business in a much better
way. Even the embarrassing stories.
Yeah.
So stay tuned and be well. Thank you. Best Beat Makers.